Leadership is taking people on a journey where there's a vision, guidance, and purpose.
Good leaders lead with the heart as well as the head.
Leadership means doing the right thing for the right reason, no matter how difficult it might be.
You're listening to Leadership Unwrapped, a podcast where you will hear from people who are living leadership every day.
Well, Niamh, what can we say about this one? We finally got to sit down with the ladies from the Will Network, with Catherine and Rachel, and had a long conversation. Listeners, we've edited, so you won't be here forever. But just absolutely thrilled to talk to these two utter powerhouses of women who have set up this national network that's there to support women who are aspiring to leadership or in leadership in education. Oh my God, what a great chat.
Yeah, it was so much fun because it was straight after we attended one of the Will brunches, and it was straight after that, and we were on such a high, I think, from all the engaging and interesting conversations that we'd had with all the amazing women that were in attendance. So to be able to follow up with that and another conversation with the two ladies was amazing, and it was just so enjoyable. I really loved it.
Yeah, and I would encourage any woman who's interested in leadership or an aspiring leadership to connect with the Will Network. They're on Twitter. They're on LinkedIn, but just to do that connection would be really good. But it's not a conversation here that's just for women. It's a conversation about leadership and support and engagement and just a total buzz, and the type of positivity around the work that we do that I really want to be immersed in. So to be able to have that space with these two ladies was absolutely stunning. Really good.
And speaking to two people, because it's our first podcast with two guests, isn't it? But to be speaking to two people that have such experience at school level leadership and system level leadership and bring it all together, to be able to see, you know, when you're speaking with them, you can really get the sense that they can see the bigger picture of what's going on. And it makes for really interesting conversation. As you say, it's not just for women in leadership, but it's also not just for people in education and leadership either. I think there's lots to learn from this conversation. Mm.
And they turned the tables a bit. It's not all the negative conversation about how hard the job is. It was really about the fantastic elements of it. Yes, it's hard, and they acknowledge that, but also what it gives you and what you can give to other people. They have that very pay it forward way of operating that I just love, that I think we need more of in the system. So I really hope, listeners, you get as much from this as we did.
Yeah, enjoy it.
So we've just come from a Will Network meeting this morning where we've met a lot of female leaders and aspiring school leaders, and it's been an absolutely fantastic morning. Still buzzing from it, I have to say. And sitting with Catherine and Rachel, who are the brains and the energy behind the Will Network. So we've collared them to sit down with us and have a conversation about it. And just to give us a sense of the type of energy and the work that this network is doing, so that our listeners can really hear about something amazing that's happening in our system at the moment. So what we thought we might start with is maybe tell us who you are and give us a little bit of your journey, and we'll chat from there.
Yeah, super. Thanks, Patricia, and thanks for being a guest at our Will Brunch this morning.
You're welcome.
It added to the energy and inspiration of our fourth Will Brunch, so we're delighted to have you as a guest. My name is Rachel O'Connor. I'm the principal of Ramsgrange Community School down in Wexford. It's a co-ed DESH rural school down by Hook Lighthouse, and I'm in my 10th year as principal of Ramsgrange. I'm leaving my post at the end of the summer, I suppose, to take up a new job, a new position. I've been seconded as Deputy Director of NAPD, the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
So that's me.
Yeah.
Looking forward to a new adventure, a new challenge.
Yeah, big change, I would imagine. I mean, a very busy job being a school leader. So obviously this will be busy too, but in a very different way.
Yeah,
so.
And I think it will be a transition. You know, I've been working very hard, you know, consciously uncoupling from my school and the people therein over the last little while. And it will be a different style of work and a different lifestyle, I suppose, even. But I've been very engaged in NAPD over the last 8 to 10 years, so I'm really looking forward to getting really stuck in.
Brilliant. We're going to wish you the best of luck with that, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more as it pans out.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it. We'll chat to you again maybe.
I'm Catherine Corbett. I'm principal of Bishop Galvin National School in Templelogan, Dublin. It's a large senior primary school, and I've been there for the past 7 years. Mm. Previous to that, I worked with the Teaching Council. I was Professional Learning Officer with the Teaching Council. And I also had a seconded position with the induction programme for teachers. Mm. So that was a time when induction was new in Ireland and was developing that programme. And my first, I suppose, post was as a primary school teacher.
Yeah, okay. Can I just ask you, that's a lot of system leadership work for both of you. So what interests you to do that? Because that is on top of it. It's more energy and more giving into your role. So what drives you to do that type of systems work with the teaching council or the other work that you've done? Where's the interest?
For me, I've always been interested in learning, teaching, education. So my first role was a teacher, and then I developed an interest around mentoring and induction, and I did my master's in Maynooth around that. Then the opportunity arose to be part of that secondment to develop a programme for induction. So different opportunities happen at different times throughout your career, and you go with your interest and what really, I suppose, what you want to have an impact, but what you're also really interested in yourself. Mm-hmm. So when I took the role as teaching counsel, it was around the area of professional learning. Yeah. And there was policy development at that time for initial teacher education, induction and continuous professional learning. So I was very much involved in that. Mm-hmm. I've always been interested in school leadership. And so with the opportunity arose in the school that I started my career in for principalship, I went with that. And I went with my heart, I suppose, I love. And that is learning and leadership.
Yeah. But there's a bit of being at the first, or you know, at the coalface of that pushing of that professional learning when you're doing that work with the teaching council is a game changer for our profession, really. So there's a courage in going into those roles and moving that forward. It's impressive.
And there's a perception of what different organisations do. And, you know, I think it's really important. We had this conversation this morning, actually, with somebody at the Royal Brunch, is that, you know, if you're working for or seconded to an organisation, and sometimes there's a lack of understanding around what that organisation does, but so much goes on in the background to mm-hmm. develop the system that we mm-hmm. have. The development of policy takes a lot of time. And then, I suppose, it filters into schools, and then you have that enactment of policy. And that changes and develops our practice. So all of the organisations contribute to the education system that we have. And just being part of that and part of that story is really important, I suppose, bringing your knowledge and experience and a wide range of perspectives to create the system that we have.
Yeah, because that must be so helpful then for your day-to-day work, having such a, like, it's almost like a helicopter view, isn't it? Because you've been involved in so many different areas and, like, developing that understanding of how they all come together.
Yeah, I think moving into the school leader role, having been in the system for 8 years, brought a perspective, knowledge, lots of connections, an experience around working with people, working with adults that has really helped me with my role as principal.
Yeah.
And I would have said that my involvement at systems level is almost accidental in terms of my need and want for networking outside of my school leader role.
Okay.
That when I became a post-primary principal 10 years ago, it was something that I always wanted. I knew as soon as I started teaching, I'd love to be a principal. Yeah. I just love to be a principal, that facilitator of teachers in a school in order to have a really positive impact on the students in our care. But when I got there, I realised at times it can be a very lonely and isolating job.
Mm-hmm.
And the buck stops with you, particularly in the sector that I was in at post-primary, the buck most certainly stops with you regardless of what happens. And so I looked outwards to where and when can I mingle and get advice and support and that mentorship piece from other people in the same position. And so through NAPD, through ACCS, through all different organisations mm-hmm. and associations. And then I realised that through my involvement in them, there is a systems level piece that actually, in terms of fixing that isolation piece for supports for school leaders, you can see it from that helicopter view to look down on that. And so accidentally then it was like, well, actually, if I get involved more at systems level, I will make the job that I'm currently in, hopefully, better and more sustainable for people in the same role as me. So it was almost accidental through my own need for a network.
Yeah. And I think what we're seeing now around sustainability of the role, and we know that there's going to be a lot more conversations about this going forward, but this is one of the solutions, is beginning to look more systemically, less about just the individual resilience of someone and more about how do we make the system more open and psychologically inviting for people, because otherwise it can be very isolating. There are things that you can talk about with your staff, but there's things that you know that you can't share that will influence your decisions, that people will kind of say, I'm not happy with that decision, but you can't always give everything you need to for the transparency that we would like to have. Mm-hmm. So that type of support looking outwards for people in that same dynamic helps, I think, in the role. So I think it's an important piece of work.
It does. And look at, I mean, it's very well documented in terms of recruitment and retention issues within senior leadership roles in Ireland. And I suppose through the Will Network, we're just looking at the female piece in terms of encouraging women to apply for these roles, because we can't hire the very best of leaders in our school if 50% of the population aren't applying for them. You know, and that's nothing against, there are wonderful male colleagues who are going for the roles and getting the roles that they deserve, but we just feel that there's a confidence piece with females in education that they're not applying for those roles. So again, then we'll have a more robust senior leadership across the entire education sector, because people perhaps will be more equipped moving down the road if we're, I suppose, what would I say, taking from a larger pool?
You know,
in terms, again, that sustainability piece, because it is, it's a chronic issue currently.
And doing the job in different ways. And that's one of the things that stood out to me at the brunch this morning was the DIYW, do it your own way. Because sometimes if you are in a school and you have experience of just one school leader, the impression can be that's the only way to do it, and it might be a way of working.
Sure.
But depending on your family context, depending on your personal circumstances, you may and often can't do it like the person before you. So if you have the opportunity to network with lots of different school leaders, you then get an insight of how to do it in different ways, and then you create, or I suppose you make the role your own to do it your own way. So that stood out to me this morning.
Yeah, me too. And I think it's funny because we think about that probably a little bit more in the teaching space, I think, of, you know, you do find yourself as a teacher what works for you, and like you obviously learn from other people. But I don't think it's spoken about probably as much within the leadership space. So that really stood out to me as well today.
Yeah, and it's that sharing of ideas. I mean, the power of a network, literally just 70 women in a room there earlier on, and just that piece, even just some women will leave this morning having that piece in their back pocket. Actually, how I do my job in my way to the best of my ability is okay. Yeah. And that's enough.
And good enough.
And good enough.
Yeah. And that's the piece. What's really interesting to us, I think, is that the research is telling us that men will go for a promotion if they have 70% or 80%. If you know, they mightn't have all of the, they won't hit all of the criteria, but they'll say it's good enough. And you know, what I don't have, I will learn on the job. But women feel that they have to have met all the criteria before they will apply. And we need to kind of leverage into that way of thinking. There are pieces that you can learn on the job, and there are pieces that you bring. And it's about not always having this weight of perfectionism before I see that I could apply for a job. Yeah.
And there are, and look, that's something that we explore through the Will Network, through feedback from our participants. There are genuine barriers to females in education. And Ivana Bakic did wonderful research on it. And she comes up with the three C's, childcare, confidence and culture.
Yeah.
You know, and we're just tapping into, I suppose, the confidence piece.
Yeah.
And it's Dr. Kira O'Donnell of PDST fame, I suppose, would have said that as soon as we start thinking about our leadership journey, we're on the journey. And that's literally just one of the ladies this morning, even just an example. Will I go for this job? There's a job next week. Won't I have been disappointed a couple of times? And she left after 2.5 hours and said, which, why wouldn't I go for it?
Yeah.
You know, she just felt enthused by the stories of the ups and downs, the failures and the get back up pieces again, that she said, I'm not the only one that didn't get a position, or I'm not the only one that has to try again.
Yeah.
And that's what the Will Network aspires to do. So I think it's job done, because we had one lady this morning that left saying, of course I'm going to apply for it. Why wouldn't I?
Brilliant. Absolutely. You know? How did you do this? I mean, how did you just end up doing this? I'd love to hear the story. Tell us the happy accident.
So this happy accident started with the Teaching Council and Phil. We were invited to sit on a panel for a workshop and talk about women in leadership. Kira works with Rahu.ie, and she asked us to facilitate, or she was facilitating a workshop for us to talk about our experience and our journey. And when she was recording it, we chatted a lot, myself and Rachel chatted a lot, and Mary Panine, who works with DCU.
That's right.
She sent a message to both of us saying, I'd love you to continue the conversation.
Wow.
And she said, would you be interested in doing something more? But I don't know what that is. And then Rachel texted me and said, look, well, we do a workshop. Westford Education Centre have asked us to maybe put on a workshop for aspiring female leaders. And we wondered, would anybody be interested? Is there something there? And it booked
yes.
up in the first day.
yeah, absolutely.
The first day, and we did it really enjoyable. We did a second round of workshops, and we had invited guest speakers. Now, it was all online. And one of the guest speakers said to us, I think it's amazing the network you're creating. And I suppose we looked at each other thinking, what network are we talking about? Yeah. So that's how the idea was born. And then lots of messages over WhatsApp saying, if we were to create a network, what would it
be? What would it look like?
Yeah. What would it be for? Who would it be for? What would be its purpose? And what would we call it? And that kind of went on, I'd say, for about a month. And International Women's Day was coming up on the 8th of March. And we decided just to take the leap, go for it and see what happened. And the response was huge. So many women, and I'd say men in leadership, said, oh, I'm thrilled to see this happening, particularly for aspiring female leaders, maybe women who weren't going for interview, huge potential, but maybe didn't have the confidence, and that this created a network where they would meet like-minded people and feel supported and encouraged to, I suppose, reach their potential, whatever that was to be. And so it's grown from strength to strength.
Yeah,
now we have over 1,200 members.
Isn't that fantastic?
We have lots of opportunities for women to engage in networking events, both online and in person. And we have our newsletter, we have a book club, and it's just grown and grown.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to see what has happened with the adventure that we had no idea.
Yeah.
And that's it, I suppose. The whole nature of the network is to create as many different aspects of it so that women, females in education, and men, whoever wants to, that feels they can get something from the network, can dip in and out of the different things that the network offers. And it's almost responsive to needs. So like Catherine mentioned, we have the Will newsletter. So it's if all you want to do is just keep up and see what's happening within the network, that's there. Will Clicks is there. Will Chapters are online book review via Instagram, because not everybody's on Twitter. So there's the Insta piece.
Mm-hmm.
Our Will Brunch, for people who just want to be in a room and be giddy in a room full of women talking about all stuff leadership, and different things like that. And we have other exciting things planned moving forward. But again, it's just responsive, and then something might fade away and something new might come in. And it's just responsive to whatever it is people feel they'd like to dip in and out
of. The themes that we choose, we listen to the members, we listen to every time we have an event, something comes up to spark the idea of what we're going to talk about next. Our first Will Brunch was around creative leadership, because we talked about creativity, and we never hear conversations about creativity in leadership. But isn't that a key piece for sustainability? Because you have to be very creative with your time, with how you do your job every day in order to make it sustainable. Our topic today was R&R. I suppose we were thinking about relaxing, but our focus then it was around relationships and resilience, because over and over again that has come up in conversations with Will members, whether it's on Will Chats or sometimes it can be an email, sometimes it can be Twitter or a response on Instagram. We go, oh, that's an interesting topic to explore further, and we keep a note of that and then decide what would be, what would our focus be and what would be empowering and helpful for the people who are engaging with us at that time.
Yeah. And you're over a year now?
It was March 8th,
2022 that we launched, so just over a year.
But the energy is still increasing. It's when you look at it a year later, and there's even more buzz and more people wanting to come and more engagement, so it's doing something interesting in the system. That's important.
I think we're tapping into something important, or I think people are, I suppose, embracing something different.
Yeah.
I mean, look at we're primary and post-primary school leaders. We're in a space that's predominantly female. More so 80% at primary school level, 69% at post-primary school level, and we're completely underrepresented at senior leadership level. So there's some kind of imbalance. There's something happening within the system where females don't feel they are in a position to, or don't have the confidence to apply for those senior leadership pieces. And if getting together and speaking about it and talking to that helps the system, we're there. Yeah. I would find as a post-primary principal, there's this weird thing that happens in staff rooms all around the country when, as a principal, I put up an advertisement for a post of responsibility and nobody talks about it. Yeah. It like becomes an episode of Men in Black. So you just, nobody knows. People, colleagues that are sitting beside each other for 20, 30 years will not tell each other. And this is, I understand it's a generalisation, but we'll not tell each other, listen, I'm going to put my name in the hat for that. Whereas what we're doing, or what we hope we're doing, one of our aspirations is to create that virtual staff room, that safe space where women can come together and say, listen, like I've probably had 15 conversations already today about people that have applied or are applying for AP1s, AP2s, deputy principalship, principalships, etc. Because it's a safe space to do so. And listen, you know, could you give me advice? What kind of scenarios might come up in that? Or how would you answer that question? Whereas that doesn't generally happen for some reason in our Irish staff rooms. And I think that's something that if we could break down, it's a genuine barrier, that if we could start breaking down that barrier, that if women that engage with the Will Network go back to school and actually have the confidence to say to their friend or their colleague, listen, I'm going to apply for that. Oh, great, okay. Because very often it's just the perception that people will, you'll be shunned, or it's not your turn, or actually, fair play to you. Listen, we'll be happy to go for a coffee and we'll have a chat about it. That even if we start to chip away at that culture, I think we're really doing something. Yeah. Yeah. The network is doing something powerful for the people in it.
Yeah. It's an honest space to share your successes, to share your ambitions, but also to share when things don't go well, because everybody has that experience, but everybody deals with it in a different way. And by sharing it, it acknowledges that it does happen. It often adds to your experience. It adds to you as a person in terms of your growth and your personal development. And it's part of life. And I think if we don't talk about it, then it can become very individualized, that it's just happening to me. But then when you're in Will Network, or when people talk today about their experiences, their career journey, and that they face those bumps along the way, it's an acceptable part of your journey. That's important, I suppose, for your own development too. So
But what you've done there, I think, is exceptional in creating that safe space. Like, that's not an easy thing to do at all. I was talking to another attendee, and like, that's going to these brunches, it's the thing that I'm always left with, is how open it is and how honest people are, and just the kind of conversation, even over coffee, the conversations that you're having with people about their feelings towards where they are at the moment, where they want to be, even if they're not looking for a leadership position, if they're interested in leadership, whatever it is, it's just a really safe space. And we were talking about the difference between the speakers, you know, for example, if you're at kind of a traditional conference or a talk or something, and it's that bit more kind of serious and intent, but it's not at all like that here, even though you have a fantastic opportunity to learn from, you know, really experienced leaders or all of the guests that you've had, but it's so safe. And like, it is a real testament to what you've done creating that. Like, how, when you think about trying to create it, it's like, how do you even start with
where
that?
Do you start?
But I think it's also the dynamic between the two of you, your interests, your values, and how much you want to open up this space, that's probably created an awful lot of that. Like, even Catherine, when you say that from that first time that you were together talking about it, the fact that you were approached after that saying, would you be interested in doing so? You know, there's obviously
that's just a
spark and a dynamic there that I think has really contributed to that. But it's a testament, because that's not an easy thing.
Thank you for saying that. But it was lovely, as Catherine was speaking to our second guest speaker today. And I was thinking to myself, what is it that's working well here? And there's a massive commonality. And I genuinely, the word that kept coming back to me was just kind. Like, the kindness of spirit, the generosity of spirit of women, like, there's almost like a hunger to share. Actually, I can help you, you can help me. I just want to share my story. I want to offload. But it's a room full of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really, really struck me today. And I just feel, going back to what you were saying about the guest speakers that we've had along the way, like, we have in Ireland incredibly mammoth, powerful educationalists leading the Irish system, but we don't know them personally. And what the Will Network is attempting to do is to get behind that, you know, that kind of general sense of what a CE is or what a professor might be, or actually, we're just normal women doing our job we've had to work hard to get here. We've had ups and downs along the way, and it's open to everybody. Mm. You know, if I can do it, you can do it. If mm-hmm. you can do it. And you know what? I might come across looking like A, B, and C, untouchable, unflappable, unwaverable, or whatever. But actually, I'm just a woman doing my job. Mm-hmm. And I have to go home now because I left the immersion on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's
it's the norm. It's normalizing these. And we are privileged. If you look at the head of the SEC, NCCA, our minister, the Minister for Special Ed, our SecGen, do you know what I mean? We have mammoths in education in Ireland that are females.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to nurture that and to invite them in and to lift, you know, females in education together. And I think it's a privilege.
I think networking has become so important. And I think we missed it when it wasn't there. And maybe because with COVID, we were all so disconnected and online and working in the digital. And, you know, I remember a principal describing to me that he said, I'm like a pilot here in the sitting room. You know, he said, I can't see anyone. I don't really, I don't know what's going on, but I'm trying to direct everybody and drive the school on. And maybe the success of Will Network is that when we came out of the restraints of COVID, that the power of connections and relationships and meeting people by chance, not pre-organized, but you know, by chance, that we really value that. And that's why I suppose our members are really engaging in everything that we do, because they, by having those opportunities to speak to like-minded people, it absolutely lifts you up. Yeah. I've walked away or signed off every Will event feeling positive, empowered myself as a leader. And probably when myself and Rachel met on that panel, it was the first time that I had the opportunity to talk about leadership and being a woman in that position and what the barriers or bridges have been, but what the barriers are, what the bridges are to overcome. And it was such an empowering conversation that's probably, I never had the conversation with another school leader before. I haven't considered the gender aspect, but we had a lot to say. Mm. And it really kind of tapped into something.
And we like each other. And we like each other.
Well, that always helps.
Yeah.
But there's something interesting about, I've had the privilege of sending a few and I have thoroughly enjoyed them. There's two things I want to say about that. The first is that it's not just aspiring leaders, but current leaders get a bit of nourishment and a reminder as to why you want to do this job. So I definitely get something from attending these as well. But the other piece has been that all of the women who have spoken that I have listened to have a generosity naturally, and that's what you meet first when they sit in that, you know, you sit in your seat and you have the conversation. Mm. But what's jumping out of everybody that I've seen has been a want and a generosity to support that 70 women in the room.
So because they've never been asked before.
They've never been asked,
and I think there was one guest we had a while ago, and it was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe I'm actually being asked for all that I've achieved throughout my career. I would love to share my story. Why wouldn't I? But I've never actually just been asked before. So we go back to females across all sectors, from early childhood all the way up to third level, further ed, higher ed, et cetera, people that just haven't been asked, if there hasn't been a forum for female leaders in education to share their stories before.
Yeah. And sometimes, we've learned this in the podcast too, you know, we think, oh, we could invite somebody and they'll probably say no. And you could do that. I mean, I talk about Edith Eger, and we've mentioned this before to each other, about the prisons that we make in our own minds. So we talk ourselves out of it before we do it. But that's not happening here. You're talking in, you're thinking it, you're doing it. There's such an energy in that.
Yeah.
But you both present with that energy. If a person just met you, you know, in a corridor, it you're sort of tapped into your own skills. You've leaned into your own skills to create this as well. Have you thought about that, or have you reflected on that?
And we were terrified at the start. But it is, you know, Michael Fullan says, sometimes you've just got to ready, fire, and then aim.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it was coming up to International Women's Day, and we said, let's just do it. Now, we were like two giddy goats. It was like, this could be an absolute, and if it flops, so what? It doesn't matter, because it was never a thing.
But let's, no one will know.
Exactly. So let's just go with it. And I think, look, you're going back to what you said, like, we get on really well. This is only our fourth time meeting in person. Mm. You know, it's the fourth fourth Will brunch. It's only the fourth time meeting in person.
But we would never think that.
You know, like we met over Twitter through COVID and through that panel then that we were both invited to speak on. But I think it's the cross-sectoral thing. I think it's a school leadership thing. And as Niamh said, I think it's a shared values thing. And it's, I think when you serve it for a particular time or any length of time in school leadership, listen, if you can share any bit of advice that helps anybody else on the way up, because it's not all bad. School leadership gets awful bad press.
Yeah, it does.
And it's not all bad. There are wonderful wins and wonderful, it's a privilege of a position. And if we can share anything out of our experience that helps others on their journey, why not?
Yeah, the narrative around school leadership can be so negative that it's an overwhelming job, it's impossible, there's so much. And I think that's probably, you know, when I like Twitter and I like learning from different personalities, different people, different positions, and I'm very drawn to positive people and people who are practical and will look at the situation, what you're doing, and enjoy what they do, because they're the people I learn from. And I remember if Rachel was tweeting things maybe about school leadership, and I was like, okay, I want to hear the good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yes, I acknowledge that it can be very tough days, and school leadership is challenging, but I want to hear the good stuff too, because I actually really enjoy the job. So I actively seek out other school leaders who enjoy the job, and that's probably how it came across Rachel. And I do that within the primary sector as well. I don't want to go to a meeting where everybody's giving out about all that we have to do. That doesn't empower me. I want to go to a meeting or to an event where everybody acknowledges that it's challenging, but focus on the bridges rather than the barriers, focus on strategies, things that can help, and give perspective that there are lots of jobs that are difficult to do, but it's, you have that responsibility and you have the ability to do the job well, but you have to be very creative. Yeah. You have to have your boundaries and you have to have passion for what you do.
Yeah. But you're tapping into something that's occupying my thinking a lot at the moment, and that is the challenges around the sustainability of the role. Why are we surprised that people don't want to take on the role if we're moaning about it constantly?
Yeah.
Why would, if we're being negative all the time, say it's desperate, it's too much, it's this, it's this. And there are moments that we feel like that. It's not to say that those days don't happen, they do. But if that's the narrative, and in Ireland we can do that a good bit, we can just talk about the stuff that isn't great more than the positives. We're sort of wired to lean into the negatives, and then we're surprised that people say, no, I won't apply for the job because I want a quality of life.
Yeah.
You can apply for the job and have quality of life. They are compatible. So there's an agency and a responsibility in ourselves and how we talk about the job that also has to feed in to moving the dial about this type of work in leadership.
Yeah, and I feel that, but Catherine and I think that we're placed to do that as well because of the work, I suppose, that we're doing in IPPN and in NAPD.
Yeah.
That it's not just, we're going to create this lovely network now with pink and flowers and it's a great job and all, come along and we'll tell you how wonderful it is. That at that systems level, it's absolutely acknowledged and recognised in terms of the sustainability piece, administrative overload, administrative burden, and the things that need to change in the system in order to retain the very, very best of school leaders. That I feel that we're placed, given that we can paint both pictures, that we can do the pragmatic systems level stuff, you know, not necessarily behind the scenes, but when we're called to do so, but also that there's a responsibility on school leaders that actually it's not all of that. And even down to when you mentioned skill sets, when I go back to the office, skills around prioritisation of tasks, etc. So that the administrative burden doesn't overtake your life and doesn't become your job description. That there are pieces that can be shared at our networks, in our workshops, in our Will chats, etc. That help leaders currently in the position to perhaps, you know, manage the job in a more sustainable way.
Yeah.
That we have to deal with the lot that we've been dealt, but perhaps through the work of the network and that the current serving leader piece, that there are tips and tricks and there are genuine ways of working that can make it sustainable within what we actually have to, with our reality.
Yeah.
We're working very hard behind the scenes and at systems level to change the reality. I say we now, the royal we of everybody involved in those organisations, obviously. But at the practical, solution-focused level, this is what we're dealing with. Let's help each other to do it in a more sustainable way.
Yeah. And I think that's really important in terms of how we support people to think about, support women to think about women in leadership. because if there is a piece that we bring as women that I must meet all of the bars, it must be perfect, I must not drop the ball, I must do everything, I mean, that's completely unrealistic in terms of leadership. So becoming comfortable in letting things fall, in being good enough as opposed to perfect, and being able to open up those conversations, because other people have arrived at that through the leadership role. Mm-hmm. And in this network, people are able to have that conversation about saying it needs to be good enough, but you can't spend yourself tying yourself up in knots that it's perfect.
And that's what's important about what Katrin, you're saying. It's not just a space to talk about all the great things we've all done, that there's an honesty in saying this didn't go well, it was a nightmare, yeah. And you know, this is why,
yeah,
and
do that again.
Acknowledging that, yeah.
Yeah. It's massive, and look at one of the things that I think, Katrin, you probably agree with me, that has resonated throughout all of our Will events from start to finish, is that once as a leader or an aspiring leader, you go to work with your integrity intact in your back pocket and you do your best.
Yeah.
Your best is very different on a Monday in August to a Friday in June, is incredibly different and maybe very, very different. Yeah. But if you show up to work every day doing your best, I genuinely feel as a teacher leader, as an assistant principal, deputy principal, whatever, so on, that you can't go too far wrong. And that's what we're trying to nurture.
Yeah, I think building leadership capacity is critical in terms of leadership sustainability. So part of your job as a leader is to empower others to see, for them to see their potential, for them to grow as leaders themselves, and so that it becomes a shared and distributed, I suppose, leadership. And that's, I think that's a really important aspect of sustainable leadership for schools in Ireland. So in term, I suppose, with the network, if you are empowering and supporting others, that's an important skill and responsibility as a leader, but you would like to see then people who are in the network to go on to be leaders to do that for their staff
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, yeah. In a pay it forward. Because the piece around building capacity isn't just about, you know, just trying to... you need sometimes to go 10 steps back, which is that you're working with somebody who you think has amazing potential, but they mightn't see it at all. And that's what surprised me as a leader when I've had a conversation with a colleague and I said, oh my God, you'd be amazing in that leadership piece. And they go, oh, I don't have that. And you're thinking in your head, you're going, oh my God, 1,000,000% you have that. Mm-hmm. But their self-concept is that they don't, because they've never had a piece of feedback from wherever that gives them that confidence in themselves.
Yeah.
And sometimes the building capacity, which the network is doing, which I love, is encouraging women to see that they potentially have that. Mm. And that's the first step.
Yeah.
And it may happen soon or it may happen in the long term, but you started on the journey to see yourself in that role or to see yourself as that leader. And that's gold. Mm.
We can be so institutionalized in Ireland in terms of you go to a school, you know, and you could work in that school for 35, 40 years and you don't look outside of that school. And I think what's happening, you know, if you're a deputy principal, you've got networks like the Tánaiste programme and you create your network, NAPD, mentoring, whatever. If you're a principal, you've got the Míseanach programme. So you're automatically being joined up to a network. But for people on the way, on the journey, on the leadership journey, there's not that space to experience what happens outside the walls of Skull, Wirra, whatever, St. Patrick's National School, whatever it is. That I think what it is just opening people's minds to that building leadership capacity piece, that hey, actually, what I can go back in tomorrow and have a conversation with my principal about, you know, maybe could I try this, could I trial that, and then the competency-based interview becomes just a telling of a story of stuff that I'm actually doing, of what I'm actually engaged in.
Yeah.
And we're no longer now living in the Mochanilach where it's, well, if I get the job, I might or I could or I would do that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's hopefully what finding those opportunities.
Then what you would is to create the next generation of leaders that will work in that way.
Yeah.
So that this becomes the norm in our system, is that you are, as a leader, looking to empower others so that your role is sustainable and that you that everybody can be to their best, as well as in whatever organisation they're working in.
So it's super relational, for to use that language.
Yeah.
It's really all about that the relationship that you're trying to build with someone to see their own capacity, and between those people in your network, but also for the, within themselves, mm-hmm. because there is that piece that we don't talk about, is about how am I looking, how am I introspectively looking at what I am capable of. And it can be a little bit intimidating to do that if you work in a culture of a staff room where it isn't okay to say, oh, I'm doing a master's in leadership, you know, because people, does she think she's going to be my next boss? Like, so there is that little piece that you're managing, you know, can I be open about this? Or where do I get that support from? And if you're not in a network like this, where do you get it?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And sometimes you can get kind of fooled into thinking we're all in competition in the schooling system. Do you know, whereas really,
and
like,
we're not.
And like, that's the, you know, that's the enemy of growth or of system change in any shape or form, really, isn't it? And like, having, even having these conversations, like, and anyone listening to it, you know, it's just the bringing of people together and saying, look, we're all trying to head in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We're all want the best for the students, for the staff within the schools, for education
for
as a whole in Ireland,
for each other.
Yeah. And equally, I suppose the privilege of it is there are equally disappointed women that have applied for
Absolutely.
Positions and they have a space where they're very welcome to turn up and share that disappointment. You know, you're successful in the job. There's a vulnerability going for these jobs and there's a courage thing. And you get the job and that's great and you're plastered all over Twitter. Well done, congratulations. But then for the women that weren't successful on this occasion, that they can come and there have been tears shed.
Yeah. Just,
and it's just lovely to be in a position to actually, you know, cry there, take that shoulder.
Yeah.
It's fine. And you know what, guess what? And it's not about, oh, well, wait and I'll tell you what happened to me. But actually, you're not alone here. You're surrounded by women that are on a journey that have had highs and lows and ups and downs and successes and disappointments. And that's okay too. And I think that's really, there's something really special bubbling away there.
Mm-hmm.
That we're merely facilitating a room. We're booking a hotel, we're booking a room. And it's the, it's like you said, the generosity of spirit of people that come into the room, there's something special about it.
And we've gained a huge amount ourselves, you know. Yeah. Sometimes say, well, how do you have time to do this, because it's just the two of us, you know. I suppose
with busy jobs
busy jobs and
families and all of that,
organizing events, the online and the in-person. But I certainly have grown hugely professionally and personally from all of the conversations that I've engaged in. I've changed the way I do things. I've changed, I suppose, in terms of interactions with people. I've been had the opportunity to listen to different, let's say, podcasts, to books, and I don't know where would I have gotten that if I hadn't got involved in the network.
Yeah.
And so I've hugely benefited.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
completely agree.
From being involved and creating this network.
I feel completely the same about the PDSL, you know, even though I'm leading it and I'm supposedly the expert, but I think there's much more expertise than is bound up in one person or one title. But I gain so much from going into the classroom with these middle leaders, maybe, or people aspiring to leadership, and the wisdom that they bring, I come out on a high.
Mm.
I was teaching in Athlone this semester, and people were saying, "You got to drive up to Athlone and down." I was like, 100%. And every Wednesday night coming, I was like, "Oh my god, I'm so buzzed!" And Thursday, I'd go into work in the morning, really re-energized, going into the tool of oppression, aka email. And actually, but I went in with a different feeling, because I hope I was giving something, but I was definitely getting back 10 times more than I felt I was giving.
We're humans. We crave human interaction. That's why we entered education in the first place.
You know,
it's the person-to-person piece. And I think particularly in school leadership, you can get dragged into, you know, the school development plan, school self-evaluation, all of the administrative stuff. That when you're back in a room with people, it genuinely nourishes my soul.
Mm.
This is where I'm meant to be at. I'm an interpersonal person.
Yeah.
And I think to have the opportunity to do that in a positive space is really, really, it's very exciting.
And where do you envisage, curveball question now, where do you envisage the network could go next?
World domination.
I don't know. Not like the Borg or anything like that. Neo Borgs here, but anyway.
But I suppose, look at what is, as we said earlier, you know, we're responsive to the needs. It's like that old, real old transition year saying, you know, you only get out of it what you put into it. And it's really dependent on, I suppose, our open invitation to the women who are members of the network to give us feedback. What is it that the women, female leaders and aspiring leaders in education want from it? We're trying to, I suppose, not reinvent ourselves, but reinvent different aspects of things that people might be interested in. So Will Chapters, the book club, there's a core of women that get really giddy around book clubs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So please join us for a book review. Wonderful. Women that love to meet us in person for brunch, etc. Moving forward, it's just to keep expanding, to show that it's not what one of my fears would be that as we move on, what you don't want is a perception now that it's an inner circle of people that just attend things.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really, really, it's not like that at all. And that's why I'd say 50% of our attendees today weren't at Will Brunch before, which is really exciting for us, because what you don't want is to create this, you know, a band of groupies that will just come together and have brunch together. It's about the sharing of ideas and expertise and opportunities. So I think part of it will be just to keep that expansion piece going through the different ways that we want to connect with women in education.
Yeah, our core purpose won't change, and that's to empower and support women in education, women in learning and leadership. That won't change, but how we do it will. And that's the responsive piece. Mm-hmm. We want to be progressive, we want to be creative, and so we need to keep in touch with women who are currently in leadership positions, both inside and outside education. Mm-hmm. We're very interested in the outside education.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Because there isn't enough opportunities for leaders in education to connect with leaders outside education.
Agree.
And we have a huge amount to learn. So there are lots of inspirational people that we have on our list to invite. So that's really important. And to keep growing ourselves, I suppose, like trialing things like using social media, like looking at other ways of using technology to keep connected.
Yeah.
Because different people like to be connected in different ways. Some people love online, some people love social media, some people love in person. So we want to continue to grow and change to adapt to the needs of leadership, women in leadership, I suppose, in Ireland. And so it's quite unknown, but that's the challenge and opportunity of the network, is that the one thing we will do is continue to be responsive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what keeps it interesting.
That's it, that's the excitement around it as well, isn't it? To be honest, that actually really struck me when we just finished the brunch today and we were sat out in the lobby just before we came here to record, and like immediately afterwards, like there was such a buzz leaving that room of the brunch, and everyone was on, you could feel it, you know, everyone was just after taking something really positive away with them. And we were out in the lobby and we were talking about that, but immediately you were thinking, right, what aspect of that actually worked well, like, and what could we maybe do next? And like, that was just so natural of what, whereas I would have been sat back, you did, look how great that was. Now 70 women going away buzzing, like, didn't I do my, like, you know what I mean?
No, whereas, but you were, Rachel, you were there with the notebook, you were out there kind of brainstorming on what you would change.
And I don't mean that you weren't soaking in the like success of the morning and, you know, reveling in that positivity, is because you were doing that as well, but you were also thinking, right, what can we do next? And I think that's why, you know, you're talking about Patricia over a year on and it's only growing, but that's because you're growing with what is needed and what is wanted, and you're moving in the same direction of what everyone else, where everyone else is moving.
We're just quite similar probably that way, in that we're not afraid of change.
Mm-hmm.
We're not afraid of changing route or changing or going with an idea. Because I might have an idea, I could text Rachel any time and say, I'm thinking of this, what do you think? And she's like, oh, that's a really good idea, let's go for that. And then equally Rachel would say, I have somebody, you know, it would be great to chat to this person, or what about this? Or we often talked about books, and we said, why don't we have a book club? And then, oh, that's what we call it. And that's where all the ideas kind of grow from, of what's the next step? What's the next step? Because if we keep brunch the same, that it has a sell-by date then. If you keep the same format, you can have different speakers but the same format. So every brunch we've tried to introduce it in something different.
Yeah.
Wheel chats, we'll have to change, we're going to change up a little bit as well. So you have to keep growing and changing, because the members need, you want engagement, and in order to get engagement, it needs to be continue to develop.
But also, like, I'm a mammy of nearly 6-year-old twins. And I'm up at 6 o'clock this morning. I've the washing done, out on the line. One of them staggers up crying, "Where's the remote, mammy?" etc. And I know that there are possibly 70 other women in the same position that got up and got into the car to come to a Will event today. And you just want it to be the best possible experience for the women who are trusting us with their morning.
Saturday morning, and that's
an absolute privilege, I suppose, for us, that people are giving up a Saturday morning. And it's a self-investment. It's definitely an investment in self, turning up to something like that. But I suppose the reflection piece is to ensure that it continues. That Niamh hasn't been to four events in her own, I won't go to number five now because I know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to be different speaker, same stuff. So I think that inbuilt piece, I know for myself, it's like the women that turn up are worth our effort to make the next one even better.
Time is so precious. Everybody's time is so precious. So when women tune into our Will chat and they decide to give their Thursday evening for an hour, put their AirPods in, go for a walk, I think it's really important. We always say this about quality. The quality must be there. We have to make sure that it's interesting, engaging, that everybody will go away with something positive, empowering. So that underpins everything that we do. The Will Clicks is our newsletter. I think there's an 85% open rate, and that's with 1,200 members. But that's because we look at the format, the content, and because if people are going to invest their time, we will never take that for granted. Because time is so precious, so it should be worth it, because that's the importance of engagement in a network.
And people will vote with their feet, so they're coming, and that's telling us that it's working. I just love the energy of it. You know, there was a few people today who shared I was quite emotional listening on a one-to-one afterwards talking to me, but I felt quite emotional listening to their story, and at the same time they were full of hope. It wasn't as this has happened to me and it's absolutely terrible. It was, this has happened to me, it's held me back. But now I'm ready. Now I'm full of hope. And I'm thinking, this is the type of
space for
women that we need to nourish and continue to open up the space for. So
Long may it continue.
Long may it continue. Absolutely.
After a short break in July.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I'd love if... I was just going to say, when we're at the brunches and you're talking to the guests and you're asking them to share a bit about their experiences and their leadership journeys, and I've often thought to myself as I've been sat there, I haven't heard really either of you with the chance, I suppose, or having been asked the opportunity to share a little bit of the reflections about your own journeys. I was wondering, is it okay if we ask you to share a little bit about, because even Catherine, you were saying there, you feel that you've learned so much and changed so much as a leader, even since the Will Network. I wonder if you just share a little bit about... experience.
Yeah, I suppose just for me, look, I'm a post-primary teacher by trade, Gaeilge and geography, and I knew very early on when I became a teacher first that I wanted to be principal. I just knew I wanted to be a school principal because I just felt, and I've had very good principals, and very different styles of principals, but I just thought, wow, what a position to be in. The potential impact of a good principal is, it's priceless. You can't put money on it. You can't put statistics on it. You can't put figures on it. So for me, that was an incredibly big challenge that I set for myself. And early on, I suppose, then I became a deputy principal first in a particular sector. And then opportunities came up locally, I suppose, to me for principalship. So I applied for several. I suppose caved more times in more interviews than I was successful. I absolutely, there was some interviewing in itself is a learning process. There's a particular style and there's a particular skills around being the interviewee that I was incredibly naive about, I suppose, when I started on the principalship journey in particular. But anyway, so 10 years ago, then I became a principal. And I suppose in a school that was on a journey. But Patricia today, you mentioned it today, and it was something that really, really meant a lot to us. The impact on your culture in your school is very much determined hire by hire. the people that you hire around you. And I've been incredibly lucky over the years. We've grown, I suppose, in size. So I've had a lot of capacity to hire people. And there was a massive turnover. I was at a stage where a lot of staff left and we were getting a lot of new staff. And I think I was very aware earlier on around I needed the right people for our school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the conversations that I had, I suppose, and it takes courage to have these conversations.
Yeah,
I was quite young as a principal, and it was kind of like, who's this young one now coming in here from the outside telling us what to do? But I was having conversations with people that I was hiring every single year. And I asked the question from very early on, are you interested in being a champion for the kids in our school? And if your answer, you don't have to answer me out loud, but if your answer is yes, well then let's work together on this. Because to me, that's what was really important for the students and the context of our school at the time. We needed champions for the kids in our care. And then from that grew, I suppose, a different change in cultural positivity around it. But I think I grew with that as well. I could see for myself as a leader that actually, you mentioned that there's a wonderful book called Immunity to Change, that we are very often assume that the answer to questions we ask is going to be no, but so we don't ask the questions.
Yeah.
But when you ask of the people around you to do stuff that is based and set in the correct values for our kids, for our students, they will actually 99% of the time they're going to say, yes, Rachel, where
absolutely.
Do I sign up? How do I do that? You know, and then my job is to support them along on that journey.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I've been on a really evolving journey as a school leader, as a person. I became a mother halfway through my decade as principal. I mean, that gave me empathy in spades.
I
went from black and white to, you know, oh, for God's sake, you're late again or whatever, to, oh my God, all seven kids have chicken pox.
Yeah.
You know, let me cover your class, go have a cup of tea. So even myself as a person has evolved.
It does, yeah.
And then after 10 years, I suppose, you know, the opportunity for NAPD came up and I really, really love my school and I said it at awards day in front of the entire school community. I started blubbering like a baby. I said, I really love being your principal. But now it's time for someone else to be your principal. And it's time for me to do something else that helps school principals and school deputy principals in my new role. So I was, you know, and I sat with it for a very long time. And I said, no, put your name in the hat and then we'll you know, do the consciously uncoupling from my school or whatever. But put your name in the hat. And the opportunities come up. I've been very lucky to be selected. So now I'm looking forward to what I've learned over the last 10 years and to give that back into the system and to be able to call to somebody in a school and sit down and have the cup on tea and, you know, tea agus play and have a chat about it and what I can, from what I've learned, from my humble learnings over the years. But I think being a principal of a school definitely changes you as a person if you're open to it.
Yeah.
If you're open to it, because you're dealing with so many different people, all of the, I hate the word, but all of the stakeholders within your school, and you're only one person doing that job. It's incredibly relational, to use your word, Patricia, not your word, but the word that you've been using. But I've definitely evolved as a person, I have to say. I'll be really honest, I'm a much kinder person than I was as a teacher. I saw myself as a really good teacher, but I was cranky and I was strict and I was chalk and talk and I was results driven and this, that and the other. But actually now at my current age with 6-year-old children and being a principal for 10 years, I've seen it all. I'm a much kinder person because of my time as principal.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Grey.
That's it.
150.
150. Exactly.
Black and white.
But you do learn so much about yourself when you have to handle yourself in the stuff that you deal with and the stories and the pieces around the hardships that people carry. That you don't know about and until you face them. And I certainly found myself that it's not that you're not fantastic at the role if you're not a mom. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I changed hugely when I became a mom, and I became kinder and less black and white. Exactly what you say, less black and white. Because when I was younger, people said, you're very black and white, Patricia. I was like, I'm not. But obviously I was. Yeah. That was the feedback I was getting. And just becoming a mom, I look back on then, the way that I thought a good teacher needed to be, complete control of the class, you know, as many A's in the leaving cert as humanly possible. You are the best teacher by virtue of the number of A's your students get. Actually, no, because hopefully they're getting them through your teaching, but they could be off in tutorial just as fast doing it. We don't actually own these results. No. They're not ours. So you learn about unlearning the assumptions that you make when you start out.
and relearning from that relational and kinder place, because life has given you the experiences that'll rub the corners off you a bit to put you there.
And only at my goodbye speech from my school there a while ago, I have three teachers in my school that I taught as a teacher in a different school. And I apologised. And I said, I'm really sorry for being such a strict teacher. And that if I knew now that what I didn't know then, I could have been equally as good a teacher, but in a nicer way.
Yeah.
You know, and such is the journey, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's just to own it.
I had the same chat here this morning with someone who I was teaching, and I said something quite similar. I look back on that now, and I look back on what I've learned in those years, and it's way more years than I want to say on this podcast, but when I look back on it now and I think, wow, how different it could have been. Now, she was really positive and it was lovely, but I know that there was probably an extra piece that I could have done or been. And that's great. The fact that you're open to that, that's, to me, means we're still in a good place around developing our leadership, because you're always developing your leadership. Yeah. You've 10 years done, but you have more to go in learning about leadership and growing in your leadership.
Mm. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Repertoire.
Yeah. Your experiences of school leadership in different roles. Certainly for me, my journey of the experience in whatever my role was and what school leadership, that my, I suppose I felt that it's such a powerful position to have in education, because it sets the culture, can set the tone for a school and set the tone for learning. So as a primary school teacher, the principal at the time, he was so empowering. And it was through questioning. He was brilliant at asking questions. And I think I developed as a teacher as a result of that. And then I was seconded, and the focus was on induction. And I would do training with principals and training with mentors. And I could see then the impact of culture on a newly qualified teacher in induction. And then I moved into the role in the teaching council and as policy development. But policy can be written and look perfect and sound like it's going to be great, but when it's the way it's enacted in the school, its enactment is determined by the culture in that school, and the person who sets the culture in that school by their actions is the principal. So from all the different things that I've done, it kept coming back to school leadership. And so when the opportunity arose for me to become the principal in the school that I started off as a newly qualified teacher, it felt like the right fit to bring back experiences in different roles and bring all of that learning experience to my school.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that's coming across from all of us today, I think, is about being reflective. And and I know, and you've mentioned this before, I do have a bit of a hang-up about over-reflecting people, but I do think there is just that piece of being aware that we're not static, that it is dynamic, and that these influences and these values are bringing a difference to our leadership. So for me, when I reflect back, my values haven't changed.
Yes.
The how I am about my values has.
Yeah.
That's the piece that's really fun.
And it's the dynamic piece that's energizing, that keeps you interested and keeps you engaged. And I think that needs to be part, if you're a school leader, that's important to keep that in mind. If you're part of a network, that's important. If you're running an organization, that's really important. Yeah. There has to be that energy for change in response to the arising needs of what your purpose is.
Yeah.
And we can't forget the F word. Like, we can have fun doing it. You know, while you two can stop sweating now.
My eyes went into thought.
You can have what?
But you know what? And it's the book by Ian Gilbert, Why Do I Need a Teacher When I've Got Google?
Yeah.
And again, it's back to the interpersonal piece. You know, you can be at the most important table in the land discussing the most important issues, but if you can't do it through a convivial way, you know, that ensues a bit of fun, that releases the tension in the room and get to know people on a, you know, a one-to-one level. What are we up to? Like, this isn't a dress rehearsal either. We're literally just here once, and it's to have an impact in the most positive way that we possibly can while we're here, I think, is really, really important.
I agree. I'm really excited about the development of artificial intelligence. I probably shouldn't say that, because everybody's thinking, oh no, well, we really can't be having chat GPT and all this kind of stuff. But I'm actually really excited about it, because it's changing the nature of how we're going to appropriate knowledge. And we're not going to need to rote everything anymore and to do all of these pieces. We do need to learn how to differentiate knowledge, but
won't it free up the space for us to be having more fun about how we appropriate knowledge and more relational in the process?
Exactly.
And I'm really excited about that. So, yeah, I'm playing around with it a lot because I think it's going to make the teacher in relation with the students will become the pivotal piece. Still pedagogy, but will be less about the content that we're delivering and more about the skills that we develop in relation to content.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about that.
And look, at there could be a whole other podcast on my thoughts around senior cycle reform and that piece around skills development. You know, my two kids are in junior infants, and by the time they're young men, old men, whatever, 30 years of age, what skills have they developed through the Irish education system that will enable them to do any job that comes their way? Jobs that haven't been invented yet. There's no point in my two lads sitting in school rote learning. There's zero point. There's the importance around a knowledge base. We all have to have a knowledge base. We all have to be able to. But more importantly, we have to now teach our students and our children how to engage with the knowledge that's available to us, how to determine what's a good source, a bad source, etc. That's where we need to move to. And we need to move there quicker than we're currently moving there.
That's radical for curriculum.
It is.
That's absolutely radical if we take that to its logical conclusion.
The most important thing is that we do it right.
Yeah, I agree.
The most important thing is that we do it right.
I agree.
You know.
But it's an exciting time to be alive. Getting a bit existential there, sorry. But but it kind of is, because it's a time of huge change.
Absolutely.
Anyway, you know,
and change, for some people, change is terrifying. For others, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
And so you have to acknowledge that and then work with that.
Yeah. Very true.
And how to support people through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things we did, and I know I'm digressing slightly, but with some of the colleagues, we had some fun. We just, come on, let's take out ChatGPT and look each other up, which was, we were all sitting at the table, really laughing. And afterwards, they had chilled out about it, because up to that point, academics were like, oh, how will we keep up with this? And students will have, you know, put this in for their assignments and I won't see them. You'll see them. You can tell the difference. But it just took the heat out of it, and it became fun. And I was going, the point is about how we diffuse that, take the heat out of it, diffuse the intensity of it, and try and harness these, because they are tools for us to do better. And so,
and it's to acknowledge that they're here. Change is here to stay.
You know, it's the constant.
It's the constant, and it's happening at a faster, greater pace than it ever has in history. I was in conversation a couple of weeks ago with Anya Hyland. And she said that when she was in school, the biggest issue with the nuns at the time was allowing, the biro had been invented. So with the move from the pencil to a biro, the invention now of a biro, and that was the biggest thing, and the nun said no, it's not happening. And then the next biggest technological change throughout her career was the introduction of the calculator, and the nun said no. You know, so we're at a stage now where actually change is constant. It's happening. It's here to stay. We've got to embrace it. And it's around the skills piece rather than the let's just shut it away, ignore it's happening, because eventually we're going to have to open our eyes and deal with it anyway.
Yeah.
And to use it to our benefit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not to be.
There's a world of possibilities, like when you take things on board and work with them.
Absolutely.
But you know, the kids are already there. I'm looking at mine. I'm kind of, they're already there, you know, and actually they're sort of telling me, do you know now there's a software that can actually check for if it's, and I'm like, how do you know? You're like, you're in school. How do you know this? But they're just, oh yeah, but we see it on this, or we see it. So they're already harnessing all of these places to get information. So we just need to rethink maybe that whole fear that we have about it, and to use Sheryl Sandberg's phrase, lean in a small bit, to be less intimidated by it. Okay. A leader who inspires you and why?
You don't have to say me, Catherine.
They don't have to be in this room.
Just hold up a page here and go, it's Rachel. It's your problem.
Genuinely, I find this answer or this question really difficult. I genuinely find it difficult because no one leader actually inspires me. I can't name one particular person. I love working with different leaders. And that's with Will Network, we've met so many. My goodness, like amazing leaders. And I take nuggets from everybody. You know, it could be the CEO of NCCA, yourself, Patricia in UL. We've had Mary Kelly in Hibernia, Niamh Fortune in Fremantle, like all of these amazing women. And I listen to what they say. I watch how they are. And I soak up what I think is what really, I suppose, interests me and gives me something to think about. So there's no one person that influences or that I aspire to be or influences me. You'll have to come back to me. I'll try and think again.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense.
No, but it makes sense. I think because it's pragmatic and that's how you are. You're very focused and practical. You sort of do the theory practice kind of blend really well, Catherine. That's how I experience you. So that you would see it in the practical leaders every day that you're engaging with and bringing to your whole network makes absolutely perfect sense for how you work.
I like having the opportunity to be around different leaders to see how they are. Yeah. Because, you know, people will talk about their leadership style, but it's actually when somebody comes into a room and it's the way they engage with people. I was at a meeting yesterday and there were 10 principals around and a CEO, I'd say, and a chief operations officer. Mm-hmm. And to watch the dynamic in the room, that really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
How
me too.
Certain people speak, how the meeting was facilitated, how the meeting was chaired. And I watched and learned from everybody in that room.
Yeah.
So that's probably the way I am about all leaders, that I watch and learn what I like and what I don't like, what I would take on myself and what I certainly wouldn't take on.
Yeah.
So.
I got a piece of advice a long time ago from Sarah Moore, who was she's a professor in UL. She's absolutely amazing. But she's also a published author and she's written some children's books as well as adults. But she's absolutely fantastic. And she was my PhD supervisor. But one of the things she said was, look to the women that are in successful leadership in the university and see what they do and how they are and take those pieces as almost like an invisible mentoring. Not you know, stalking people or anything, just literally just seeing how they are and seeing what are the bits that you can then take into your leadership and what are the pieces that you won't. And I thought, what a really good piece of advice.
Yeah.
Because what she was saying is, you are surrounded by amazing women. Just see them.
Yeah.
And that was a fantastic piece of advice.
And my answer would be similar, actually. Like, you know, you could go through the Michelle Obamas and you could go through all of those, you know, global forces of nature, whatever. But for me, and I have it written down here from earlier because you did give us a heads up.
It says
cat. No.
But you are included.
I can read it from here.
We're holding up the Catherine page next.
No, you are included in here because it says mummies, actually.
Yeah. So I'm the only one that isn't in.
And genuinely,
but we're waiting for a day out.
And it's not to harp on.
I'll be editing that.
And it's not to harp on about the mammy thing, but I genuinely, again, since becoming a mother, and there is another, I suppose, extension to your role in life when you become a mother.
Yeah,
and
there is.
The physical burden, the emotional burden, you know, there is another piece. But for all of the mammies that turn up to work every day and show up to work every day when Johnny, Mary and little Bridget have chicken pox, but yet mammy still gets up in the morning and comes to work, I genuinely, and to all the mothers of twins out there, special breed, it's very, very difficult, and we do shoulder a lot, and I just think hats off. I think they really genuinely inspire me. And that goes back to my own mother of six and my own grandmother, a mother of nine who ran her own business back in when you know what I mean. I come from a long line of very strong independent women, you know, and I just think
I love that.
Hats off, genuinely.
Definitely
brilliant. So the next thing then is looking back in your own journey, is there anything that you would do differently and why?
I'm really happy that I've had different roles, because then when I reflect back on the different roles, how they informed how I do things now. I'd probably tell my former self or the start of my career is just have a little bit of patience. Nothing is forever. You can change if you're not happy or not comfortable with something, and take risks. You know, it's okay to take risks. I do like change. And that's okay as well. I do get excited by new projects, new things. And very much when something is completed, I'm almost ready for the next thing. And it's probably what you saw in the lobby, is that brunch is done now. Yeah, it's great, great. Okay, what's next now? How do we go to the next brunch? And that's I think, how we're quite similar that way. But to have a little bit of patience, enjoy the experience that you're in. I suppose value the connections that you make, because I've seen as you go through your career, you will meet all of those people back around again at different things and
so
at different
true.
times. And a friend of mine, she often says, you know, sometimes you do a lot of work and it goes, you think it goes nowhere, that hard work is never wasted, because someone or some opportunity, someone will remember, some opportunity presents itself, and it might be something you did 5 years ago. And I've seen that different things that I've engaged with at the moment, and say, I remember you when you were in the teaching council, I remember you when you were in NIPT, and I think, oh, okay, that at the time I didn't realize how important the work and the connections I was making, but actually it's all part of a longer journey for your career. And to make sure that when you work with people, that how you make them feel and the quality of work is really important, because it does come back around throughout your career.
Yeah
I often, in terms of what would I do differently, I suppose there's a reflection piece, and then there's a dwelling on the past piece. And I'm not a dweller on the past. Mm-hmm. I'm a great fan. I play a lot of golf. That's my outlet. That's how I, you know, stay sane. And Ben Hogan is a very old golfer, very wise. And he used to always say, the only shot in golf you have to worry about is the next shot. What's done is done. You know.
That's pretty good.
So at times I would think to myself, did I become a principal too young? Did I become a deputy principal too young? Should I have had my kids before I became a principal, and so on and so forth? But then I actually tell myself, Rachel, you're at where you're at. Yeah. You know, your journey is your journey. Own it. It is what it is. You know, and I really believe that it happened in the way it happened for particular reasons, because there were choices along the way. I went A or I went B. And for whatever reason, given my circumstances at the time, I allowed myself to make that choice A or B. So I would be quite pragmatic in that way, that I'm at where I'm at. And because of what I did in the way that it was done, and I can't change it. So, you know, I'm not going to dwell on it. But, you know, I'll still be incredibly frustrated on the golf course. Despite that wise sage advice.
Very wise.
But I suppose it is what it is. And I'm at where I'm at. And I think just to learn from those experiences, and then perhaps when I come up to that fork in the road, A or B, my past experiences might inform decisions.
Yeah.
So you bank them.
Yeah, you
don't
do.
Dwell on them, but bank them. And then I might make more informed decisions moving forward. But to what Catherine, it's definitely, you're in a network in Ireland, in the education system. You will meet the same people over and over again. And then the opportunity within the Will Network to meet new people that aren't on your circuit, you know, air quotes, you know, that aren't in your, you know, solid network or whatever. And that's what's exciting moving forward then, that might, I suppose, change directions that I'm unaware of even now, you know, and open up doors and opportunities that I'm unaware of now.
Yeah. And I've always gone with what I'm passionate about. And I've always gone with my instinct.
Yeah.
And it has never done me wrong. Is that bad English? Failed me. Actually, it has never failed me. So when I was interested in induction, I made that move. When I was interested in policy development, I made that move. I was always interested in school leadership, made that move. I'm interested in women in leadership positions. And I think that's, just go with your
follow
passion.
Your gut. Yeah.
Because you will, like, you need to enjoy what you do, because you spend so much time doing it. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then you must change.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
There is only one run at this. And and you've said already, it is short. So it is about,
just having that trust in yourself to go after where your instinct is leading you. Mm. I've always given the same piece of advice. I say that when our instincts are sound, they're a really deep part of us that keep us safe. And any time I've gone against it, I've felt it. Mm. You know, I really felt it, and I don't do regret either. I bank it like you do, and I say, okay, I'm going to learn the lesson. It hurt. I'm learning the lesson. I'll move forward. But I've learned to trust the instinct piece, and that's, I hope, the piece that as women that we share with other women, because we're not always attuned as women to trust that instinct part of ourselves. We lean into imposter syndrome a bit faster than we do to our instinct, which actually is what's keeping us safe. I think that's really useful.
I love to work, and I also love my family. And I think if I'm going to invest time in my work, it better be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's
I get exactly what you're saying. I get exactly what you're saying. And I think it's important for all of us. Mm. I think that's really... Any advice, Rachel, for anybody who's
I've jotted down just a couple of things.
The millions.
but someone starting out, obviously get involved in a network. Okay, that's really important. We're going to say that. So get involved in the network, because I think that support system outside of the institution of your own school, it's really important.
Yeah, really good.
And then I've two other things written down here. Don't be in a hurry. Learn your trade. Learn your craft. Become a master craftsman before you jump into a leadership position and patronise other people around you, pretending that you, you know, and that's probably not even the right way to put it. Learn your craft so that you can lead with authenticity and people will trust you because you've become the master craftsman is probably the better way to put it. And then the third, as a woman and as a female in education, don't sacrifice too much of yourself for your family. And don't sacrifice too much of yourself and your passions for your other half. And don't sacrifice too much of yourself for your job either.
Yeah.
Stay true to yourself. Follow your passions, like Catherine has spoke about so passionately here. Just follow your passions. Yeah. And if you're in the right place and if you're in the right relationships and you've got the right support from those around you that love you, you can still follow your passions. And don't be afraid to do that. It's okay to be a little bit selfish along your journey of leadership.
Brilliant.
Let's say take risks. The biggest risk is the one you don't take. And if you're always wondering what if, and you know, if a position comes up and you think, will I not? And my husband is very pragmatic, and you know, if I think, oh, I might go for a position, but how will this happen? And he would say to me, yeah, but you haven't got the position yet. We worry about that.
Exactly.
I haven't got an interview, by the way. So, you know, what it kind of brings you back to, you've almost put yourself in the role. How are you going to manage it? You haven't even got the job yet.
I'm okay.
And it's just, but you can't get a position unless you put yourself forward for one. And you can almost talk yourself out of, because you can think of all the problems and all the barriers, but actually none of that matters if you haven't got a position.
Yeah.
So the first step is to putting yourself forward and taking that risk, because what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
And Arlene Forrester that we had this morning was superb. And it was just, she talked about all her decision making throughout her career.
It's really good.
And it was that advice. What's the worst that could happen? And look at the career she's had and the position she's in now. And I'm sure it's challenging, but that she has achieved like her ambitions. And I think that's really important.
I would say the same. I think, and I've given this advice to many people who've said, should I or should I not apply for a position? Or if I do, or if I, and I say, cross that bridge when you come to it. Get to the position where you have the choice first, then make the choice. You know, but just don't cut off the choice before ever. Because when you get, by the time you go through that process of interviewing, you may attach to what the outcome would be in a way that you hadn't before you started. Or you might not attach by virtue of the experience of being in the room with the panel, and you think, maybe these are not the people I want to work with. And that you can listen and make choices, but you have to give yourself the platform to make those choices.
Yeah. I think sometimes mammy guilt is, we have to talk about mammy guilt.
Yep.
Yeah, and I suppose thinking back, you make choices, and they're family decisions, because you have a partnership. And children have a father as well. You know, that's really important, that is that partnership, that each person supports each other.
Yeah.
You're also a role model for your children. And so I think about how my children might talk about me in the future. And I hope they say that she always went for, you know, she took things on, she worked really hard, she made a difference. She inspired me that I could do and be anything I want to be. And so that's very important to me.
Yeah.
And I think you have to have that conversation in your head to silence the mummy guilt.
Yeah, I think so. And a woman at the network today, just when we'd finished, she said to me, you know, I've become an AP2. And my son was so proud. And I even feel emotional saying it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And her son has grown, but that he had seen her journey and seen. And I said, he was more excited than I was. I said, because he has seen how hard you have worked to be where you are. And it was like a fantastic moment to share with someone.
Yeah.
Just thought,
how wonderful.
That, so there is the mammy guilt that we battle with. I battle with it myself. But there is that other piece where our children see that women can work really hard and be successful, and they're proud of that. And yes. we're teaching our boys that, and we're teaching our girls that.
Correct.
That's as important.
And I worked, I did my PhD, and it took 6 years. And in the 6 years, I had my third baby, I changed jobs, and we moved house. But it was an ambition and a goal for me, and I will never forget my graduation.
Yeah.
And my three children were there. They all took turns trying on the robe. And it was Mammy's book. It was all like, is your book finished yet?
Yeah.
And I said, it's nearly there. But it was one of the proudest days, because it was something I wanted, it's something I worked hard for, and it's something that you have to build into your life for those 6 years. And I was delighted to be able to share that with them, because I hope that they've learned that if you really want something, you've got to work really hard, but it's
possible.
Really worth it.
And I always say, coming through that myself, my son was born and I lost members of my family during the time that I did mine. And I say, we all own it.
Yeah.
It's not just mine.
Our PhD.
It was because it's the sacrifice of my husband who made sure that he was even more present to mind my son when I was actually... Because it's really hard to leave your babies and go up to that room and do that piece of work. And everybody, your mom and your friends and everybody just chips in and helps you to get there. So I think it's a jointly owned piece. I mean, I get to have the title Lucky Me, but I do feel my family owns it. I think that's really cool. Yeah. Brilliant. Powerful women, I have to say. It's a pleasure to spend time with you. I was really looking forward to sitting down with you today, and I really feel privileged to be able to join the network, and I just gain so much nourishment myself from sitting listening to the other women, but also from being in your company, and you practice that relational piece that I'm trying to champion and that means so much to me in the work that we do as educators. You live it every day, so you're the epitome of the type of people that we want on our podcast. So thank you for giving us your time today.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah,
it really has. Thank you.
Yeah, for all your support. I suppose when the Will Network was established over a year ago, and when you attended that first brunch, and then just it's the little piece of support that have built the network to what it, it has been, those messages, people coming and attending and championing the amazing women that we have in education. So thanks for all that support.
More done and more to do.
Absolutely.
And it's been fun.
Thanks,
Edward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A fabulous morning followed by a wonderful afternoon as well. Definitely. Thanks
great
so
Saturday.
Much.
Thanks, ladies.